Hello, and welcome to the Pro Football Weekly Fantasy Football Podcast. This is the game-by-game breakdown for Week 10. We're going to go through each game and give you some of our favorite plays, a couple of sleepers, and then with a few bold calls. My name is John Solly. I'm a PFW Fantasy Football contributor. You can find me on Twitter at JSolly. I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Arthur Arkish, PFW Fantasy Football writer, and really all everything for PFW. You can find him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how's it going, man?
John, I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. And as always, joined by Kyle Neighbors, PFW Fantasy Football contributor and Northwest Herald sports editor, and our representative in the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Football League. You can find him on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. Kyle, how we doing in this league, man?
So how about this weather?
the Deshaun Watson thing, it didn't go our way.
Well, so that was bad enough to start the week. I'm like, all right, I'm going to break this two-game losing streak. And then Deshaun Watson goes down. And then on Sunday morning, I'm sitting there with my coffee, and I see the Leonard Fournette news, and I'm just like, well, you know, this is going to be great.
not great when you lose those two guys for a week.
Yeah, it's turning rough pretty quickly here.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll turn it around this week, but that's not why you called. We're going to go through each game here, and we're going to start with Minnesota at Washington. 42 is the over-under. Minnesota favored by a point and a half on the road. Kyle, who are some of the guys that you're looking at in what looks like a pretty ugly, low-scoring matchup to me, at least?
Yeah. Well, I'm very interested in Jerick McKinnon, as we talked about on the DFS podcast. Outside of that, you know, if you got Diggs, you're playing him. You got Kirk Cousins, you're playing him. I guess, Arthur, what do you make of this situation on both sides of the ball? One, with Washington's offensive line in the shape it's in, and two, are we going to be worried about Case Keenum being pulled here at any point?
Yeah, both good questions, and certainly the Washington offensive line, amazing what they went into Seattle and did with 80% of that unit missing last week. Not that they protected Cousins. He got beat up good, but a gutsy performance to will them to a victory. It's another tough pass rush, so yeah, just keep an eye on the injury list, but it's not like you're real excited about the Washington backs anyway, and this offense has just become such a crapshoot, so I don't know how much it really affects things. As far as the Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater situation, I don't think it affects Sunday, but it's fascinating. I mean, Case Keenum hasn't really been much of a fantasy commodity. He's been good for the Vikings, not for fantasy owners. I'm not sure Bridgewater's ceiling is really that much higher, so I don't know that it necessarily affects the skill guys all that much. It's kind of one of those things that I find to be more intriguing in kind of real football, you know, reality versus fantasy. What do you think, John?
Man, I don't love a lot of these guys, and especially when we don't have certainty at quarterback. The only guy that I really want to trust on the Minnesota side right now is Kyle Rudolph, and I think everybody else is matchup dependent.
Yeah, Kyle Rudolph would be a good play, obviously, against that Washington secondary that can't really defend tight ends. They're giving up a ton of yardage. I'm just excited to see Stephon Diggs now healthy coming out of the bye. Curious to see if he sort of supplants Adam Thielen, but of course it's Thielen who's going to be more likely to avoid Josh Norman Sunday because he lines up in the slot more often. So I like both of those receivers this week. I think I have them at WR10 and WR13, but definitely real anxious to see if we're going to see a healthy Stephon Diggs and he can get back to being dominant.
All right, let's move on to the next game. Green Bay at Chicago, 38 is the over-under. I believe that's the lowest over-under on the board by at least a couple points, with the Bears as a rare favorite in this series. The Bears are almost a touchdown favorite at home against the Packers. Jordan Howard looks like an absolute smash play this week, Arthur.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Howard's going to be not only, you know, coming off the bye, extra rest, and gets this Packers D that can definitely be had both on the ground and through the air. But the Bears offensive line should be healthier too, maybe as healthy as it's been all season. So I love Jordan Howard in this play. I've got him as, I think, my RB6 overall. I like Tariq Cohen too. I think if he's not, you know, he's a passable he's a solid flex play and kind of a desperate RB2 play this week. With the Packers lacking Morgan Burnett, he's already been ruled out. It's probably going to be a combination of Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan trying to cover Tariq Cohen. And I don't think that's going to end well for the Packers. So I think it's a good opportunity for the Bears to get both of those guys really involved. What about you, Kyle?
I don't know if I really buy the Tariq Cohen thing. I think it's just kind of a limited player with not a lot of upside. I'm more interested to see what's going on with the Green Bay Packers running game here, because here we thought Aaron Jones was kind of stealing this job away, and then last week happened. He carried the ball 5 times. Do you see any kind of clarity moving forward here, Arthur?
Yeah, well, I mean, Mike McCarthy provided the clarity, and I don't think fantasy owners are going to like it. I guess Ty Montgomery owners will like it, but not Aaron Jones's, because he said he liked the mix that they had in that loss to Detroit. It was a failed pass protection by Aaron Jones early in that one that seemed to kind of relegate him to the sideline for the most part. So, it's shaping up to be one of those kind of dreaded timeshares, unfortunately, which I don't think anyone saw as recently as 2 weeks ago when Jones was shredding the Saints in the first half. So not ideal, but I'll tell you what, it looks like the Bears may be without Danny Trevathan, and they're obviously already without Jarrell Freeman. Ty Montgomery went absolutely bonkers on the Bears at Soldier Field last year. I realize this is a much better Bears defense, but I do worry a little bit if it's going to be Christian Jones and Nick Kwiatkowski, who's also not fully healthy out there starting Sunday for the Bears in the middle.
Yeah, it's just kind of it looks like a low-scoring game, really, no matter what, to me at least. I just don't think there's a ton of fantasy goodness in this one, especially. I mean, you can't really look, if you've got Jordy Nelson, you're rolling him out there. But I mean, man, you know the ceiling is capped.
Yeah, first one to 10-point wins.
All right, with that, let's move on. Pittsburgh at Indianapolis. 45 is the over under. Pittsburgh favored by 10 on the road. Obviously, you're starting Bell and Brown. Kyle, I want to get your take on Juju Smith-Schuster, a guy who I know Arthur's been high on, I've been high on. He smashed against the Lions on that Sunday night game. This looks like another great spot for him, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we've said it for, I mean, going back 4, 5, 6 weeks now, that even when Martavius Bryant was not in the doghouse, that Juju Smith-Schuster was actually seeing a higher snap count than Martavius Bryant. Now, I'm kind of interested to see if they work Martavius back into the lineup this week at all. Arthur, are you hearing anything out of Pittsburgh about what their plan is with him?
Just the reports that I've read, and they do indicate that that Martavis is absolutely going to get involved again. He was running with the ones coming out of the bye. So, in my opinion, Juju Smith-Schuster's become a must start, particularly against this Colts secondary, of course, that just IR'd Vontae Davis on Thursday, a few hours before this taping. You guys are the DFS aficionados. Is Martavis Bryant has got to be close to a minimum bye this week. It could be a sneaky spot, no?
I want to see how they use him first.
Too risky. Okay. Yeah. What about Big Ben on the road against this burnable Colts D? John Solly, is game script going to get in the way of him going off, or is Big Ben back and even going on the road in good graces?
So we brought this up in the DFS podcast. There's a great website, stat website out there called Number Fire, and one of their writers, I'm trying to pull it up right now as I'm talking. There's a very small sample size here. It's from Brandon Gadula, and I'm sure I'm messing up his name. But Ben Roethlisberger, as Brandon writes here, has basically been best in domes, and the sample size is small, but in 16 games he has his best completion percentage, his best yards per attempt, and his best air yards per attempt, with a TD percentage of 5.3% compared to when he's on the road, typically 4.2% is his TD percentage, with the completion percentage 3 points lower. So, you know, everyone sort of knows about Ben's home road splits, but it turns out in domes, he's been all right. His last game was in a dome. He threw for 300 yards. So I think the matchup itself, if you take out all the statistical analysis there and the small sample size, the matchup itself is great against an Indianapolis defense that can't stop anybody. And like we just mentioned, IR'd Vontae Davis, or got rid of Vontae Davis.
Yeah, I think they cut him.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah, cut, not IR. Thank you for that correction. All right, I got Big Ben as QB10 this week, and he gets his right tackle and Marcus Gilbert back. He's the guy, I believe, who would go up against, it'll be a combination of Jabal Sheard, who won the game for the Colts last week in Houston, and John Simon, if he's good to go. So, I think it's a good spot for Big Ben and the Steelers to keep rolling.
Yeah, anybody on the Indianapolis side in this one? I mean, T.Y. Hilton actually was limited at practice today.
I'm still waiting to see if Marlon Mack is eventually going to solidify this role. Obviously, right now he's still stuck in the timeshare with Frank Gore, who I think Frank Gore actually found the end zone last week, didn't he? No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. At some point, the Frank Gore show has to stop. Like, the Colts aren't playing for anything. I just don't understand why they're not giving Marlon Mack more work.
Yeah, he had out snapped Frank Gore in the previous two games before Sunday in Houston, and then that kind of flipped back. But if you're of the belief like I am that the Colts are going to be trailing in this one, you know, Marlon Mack, he's not the better pass pro back, but he is the more explosive, higher upside receiving back. So I've got him ranked a little bit higher, but those guys are both kind of desperation flex plays this week.
You know, this is one of those situations, too. It's like you got a coaching staff trying to save their jobs down there, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Like, you're looking for any kind of spark to show that there'd been progress made, and you're trotting Frank Gore out there for 50% of the snaps. I just don't get it.
Well, John, as we know, Kyle just hates future Hall of Famers on that podcast. So, I get your point, Kyle. I totally do. But again, pass protection it does make sense. And when you have an inexperienced quarterback like that against a pretty dangerous pass rush, I can understand why Frank Gore is still getting trotted out there at least a little bit.
It's playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
Sure. Can't argue with that.
It's playing to be unemployed here pretty soon.
Well, yeah. All right, let's move on to the next game. Chargers at Jacksonville. 41 is the over-under. Jacksonville favored by 3.5 at home. And guys, assuming Leonard Fournette doesn't miss the team photo, this is going to be another great matchup for him, Kyle.
Yeah. First off, why are they taking a team photo in November? Anyone?
Because this is the Super Bowl time for the Jaguars.
You can't live it up. You couldn't even get through that sentence before you started laughing. There
was a little curious.
Yeah, I it's pretty clear cut with this team, right? Just they're going to hand the ball to Leonard Fournette. Obviously, the more interesting side is always going to be on the opposite side of the Jacksonville matchup here. We were talking on the DFS podcast. I love Melvin Gordon. Is there any reason, though, Arthur, to play anyone else against this Jacksonville secondary?
Maybe Hunter Henry, but that's about it for me. Yeah, I'm scared off of the Keenan Allen. I don't even know if people still roster Tyrell Williams. What a disappointing follow-up it's been for him, obviously. But, I've got Hunter Henry, as my tight end 9 this week, and I think you have to have him in lineups if you have him. But aside from that, no, it's kind of Melvin Gordon or bust. I did write about Melvin Gordon this week in the running back rankings. I really think he's RB5 overall in the first half of the season, and I think his ceiling is much higher than that. So be excited if you have Melvin Gordon, because they're going to ride him if the Chargers have any chance of getting back in this thing. They haven't really done it yet, but he has 8 total touchdowns. So, and then I would throw in Marquise Lee on the Jaguars side. I think he's absolutely earned some fantasy relevance at this point, and it looks like it could be another week without D.D. Westbrook. So Marquise Lee can kind of build on what was his best game, his best fantasy football game ever last week, finding the end zone and totaling roughly 80 yards or thereabouts on 12 targets.
Yeah, I don't mind Marquise Lee as a WR3 or a flex play this week. Not at all. All right, let's move on to the next game, which I think has some sneaky shootout potential. And that's Jets at Tampa. 43 is the over-under. It started out as 41, so the over's been hit on this pretty hard. With the Jets favored by 2.5 on the road against a Tampa Bay team that has pretty much given up and is starting Ryan Fitzpatrick in a potential revenge game. But Arthur, I want to get your take on this game, because I think there's some decent fantasy outlets here, especially with Mike Evans suspended and Winston out. We need to monitor the Jets running back situation. Matt Forte has missed practice the last two games. So Bilal Powell may be a guy that we could fire up this week with confidence.
All right. So another week of having no idea what to expect from the Jets backfield. That should be a lot of fun. You know, I had Forte ranked clearly higher because he you know, barked about his role and then he got fed and had a big game last Thursday night. It was almost long enough we forgot about it. But now apparently the mini bye wasn't enough for him to be healthy. So, yeah, yeah. Simply monitor that, obviously, but people have been running all over the Bucks. So whoever it is, Forte, Powell, potentially both, feel really good about them. You know, the Bucks defense kind of quit last week, but they still do have some talent in the secondary. That being said, Josh McCown, guys, has been one of the best fantasy quarterbacks there is over the past handful of weeks. And Robbie Anderson, maybe I shortchanged him because I really thought he was just a deep threat. And he's starting to develop, and he is clearly past Jermaine Kearse as Josh McCown's favorite target, Kyle.
Yeah, the Josh McCown house of cards is going to come crashing down at some point, but I think at this point,
not this week.
Yeah, I say that probably not this week though, right? Arthur or John, someone is Ryan Fitzpatrick streamable?
I think so.
I say I absolutely not, but he's not in my top 20 quarterbacks this week. So
I think if you're desperate, Fitzpatrick is not a terrible, terrible match. I know, you know, he won't have Evans, but he's still got DeSean Jackson. Adam Humphries is a guy that's going to get six or seven targets and can be viable. I know that the Bucks have given up, but you know, Fitzpatrick, you know, he's a guy that is competent enough to get you, you know, 10 fantasy points, 12 fantasy points as a streamable guy.
Yeah, and Tyrod Taylor just went to the Meadowlands and looked pretty good against that Jets defense. So I think it's possible. I mean, it's welcome to the modern day NFL when we're actually considering playing Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I guess that's beyond the point here, right?
Hey guys, I lied. I do have Ryan Fitzpatrick as my QB20 this week. So if you're in a super flex league and you're looking for a lower tier QB2, have at it. I do have such luminaries, including Blake Bortles, CJ Beathard, Eli Manning, and a few other cats in front of them, for what it's worth.
Hey, I'm all over the CJ Beathard love this week. So, I mean, we'll get there.
I can't wait.
All right, guys, let's move on to the next one. Cincinnati at Tennessee. 40.5 is the over under. Tennessee favored by 4.5 at home. Guys, AJ Green just spent the last few days being told by everyone that he's soft. I think AJ Green, and I don't think this is a bullet call, so I'm not going to make that my bullet call, but I think AJ Green is WR1 this week. Anybody want to disagree with that?
No, I mean, you heard my rant on the DFS podcast already about how much I love AJ Green, so I'll let Arthur try and talk you off the or talk both of us off that ledge, but I don't really see a great argument against it.
No, yeah, you won't get one from me. I just I put Antonio Brown there just because who he is and who the Colts defense is. But, you know, there's no argument here. I would expect AJ to go off and do more so by actually catching passes than throwing haymakers this week, which will be good.
One guy I want to talk about is a potential flex player, or a guy that you probably need to pick up off your waiver wires if he's there, is Corey Davis. Came off the injury, saw 75% of the snaps. I think he's a guy that is going to reestablish himself as possibly the top pass catching option in that Tennessee offense. What do you guys think of Corey Davis this week?
Kyle, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, you know, he played heavy snap before the injury. I think we talked about this last week, didn't we, Arthur? That we were interested to see what his snap count would be. Obviously, he stepped back in and right away, you know, not great results against a very good Baltimore. I shouldn't say very good, but above average Baltimore secondary. Much better matchup here this week. I'm not sold on Cincinnati's defense, so I think that he's in. He's definitely in consideration for your flex spot or a WR3 if you need him. And really quickly, going back to that AJ Green fight, he joins the long list of luminaries who thought it was a great idea to take a swing at someone wearing a helmet.
Yes, that will never cease to amaze. It's just, I guess you get the blood flowing and you just lose all control. So on Corey Davis, I have him as WR35 this week. And gosh, if he's still on waivers, go grab him right now. The Bengals secondary is still pretty decent. A lot of first round talent in the corner room, but it gets better from here for the Titans. And as both of you guys have alluded to, he's got a chance to really ascend to that number one role for Mariota. He only had two catches for 25 yards, but one of them was an absolutely beautiful back shoulder throw on the sideline. I think Corey Davis can really change things for a lot of owners if you're going to have him on your roster down the stretch.
All right, well, let's move on to the next game. New Orleans at Buffalo. 46.5 is the over under. New Orleans favored by 3 on the road. Kyle, I want to get your take on this game because I think there are a lot of interesting plays, but I want to get your take on this one.
I'm going to start off with saying bet the over because, I mean, yeah. We've seen it for 2 years now. The Buffalo offense plays much better at home. I respect the Saints secondary, but we know what the strength of this Buffalo offense is, and that's running the ball, whether that's LeSean McCoy or Tyrod Taylor and old man Mike Tolbert getting in still. But I think they're going to put some points on the board there. I'm kind of interested to see once again how this shapes up with the Saints backfield. But I'd say they're both probably ranked pretty highly for you, right, Arthur?
Oh, yeah. I got Mark Ingram as RB6 or 7 this week, and I've got Kamara just outside the RB1 range. Love them both. I've got RB13 on Kamara. So, yeah, there's plenty of room for both. Clearly, we've seen in this New Orleans offense. I'm more interested to know, guys, Drew Brees has thrown for 300 yards with multiple touchdowns once this season. Michael Thomas, great player, has not been a great fantasy resource in year two. Gosh, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I would guess that Ted Ginn has more fantasy points than Michael Thomas on the season. What do you guys think? I mean, is there going to be big days in Breeze's and Thomas's future? Or is this just kind of what this is going to look like this season?
I say that this is probably what it's going to look like. Sean Payton's a smart enough coach that he realizes for the first time in several years he has a real defense there, and he's got two very good running backs that are talented in multiple facets of the game, and I don't see a reason for him to go back to the shootout mode that they had to exist with for the last few years.
Yeah, I agree. He's got two quality running backs who are also pass catchers, and you know, Michael Thomas, it seems like every game he's sort of approaching like 6 catches, 90 yards, but you're not seeing that like 8 catch for 120 and, you know, getting into the box once or twice type game. And I don't know that you're going to.
And, you know, I think the best way, the biggest indicator of this is the fact that like Kobe Fleener isn't even getting on the field at this point. They're just bringing Josh Hill out there and using him as a blocker and going with the power offense.
Right, and they've got those, like you said, both of the backs so good in the receiving game, too. I should point out, I had to go check on that. This is how high of a bar Michael Thomas set as a rookie. He's on pace for 100 catches and almost 1,100 receiving yards and 4 touchdowns. Would you guys have guessed that? I don't know. Maybe it's happened very quietly.
Yeah, I mean, he's been averaging, you know, close to 70 yards a game. He just hasn't had that big one, you know?
Okay.
He'd been running a lot of 10 to 12 yard routes. He hasn't had a lot of deep routes.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. And we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, it stinks, though, if you kind of thought you were getting an elite quarterback wide receiver stack, like I know I did in one league, and it just hasn't really hit. But since we think this game may shoot out, let's just hit real quickly on Buffalo, guys. Charles Clay is back on the practice field this week. I assume Calvin Benjamin's going to debut. What do you guys think both this week and rest of season for now Tyrod having a couple weapons?
It raises my projection for Tyrod, but okay. I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah. I'm in agreement there. I do think Charles Clay will probably resume his role as his top target. Maybe not this week because the Saints have actually been really good against tight ends, but moving forward, particularly once Clay shows that he's healthy, but I have no idea what's going to shake out here at wide receiver for them.
Okay. It was unfortunate to see Zay Jones finally have himself a game and then get hurt. I hate it when that happens. But yeah, it's all the more reason where there's going to be opportunities. And we should just add that Kelvin Benjamin, this is pretty unique. He's going to see Marshawn Lattimore as a member of two different teams this season. And Benjamin had his quietest game of the year, first time out against New Orleans when he was still in Carolina. Only two catches for 8 yards. So that's worth noting for Benjamin owners this week.
Yeah, it's interesting that we're only 10 weeks in here. And Marshawn Lattimore in his rookie season has already joined that list. And there's not many of those cornerbacks where I see... When I realize that I see him on the schedule, I just go ahead and cross out whatever receivers that he's going against.
It's pretty impressive stuff, and I'll tell you what, it's in this same matchup. Tre'Davious White isn't too far behind anyway. He's not quite there yet, but he's been really good too. There's a little plug. Listen to the Pro Football Weekly podcast as well this week. Eric and I actually wondered aloud whether Mickey Loomis might be in the conversation for Executive of the Year. It may sound crazy, and it may be more Jeff Ireland who's doing it behind the scenes, but who's had a more bigger impact rookie class? Not many clubs than New Orleans thus far.
We're to the point now where I actually think the Saints might be the favorite in the NFC.
It doesn't sound crazy to me. They have the experience edge behind center, and good teams. I'm not ready to rule out the Eagles either, obviously, but I'm very impressed with the Saints right now.
Guys, we've been talking about this game for 5 minutes, and we haven't brought up LeSean McCoy once.
Well, you're gonna play him, right? Like,
if you're gonna play him, but I think he's gonna have an incredible game. I think he is definitely a big part of this. This offense in this game specifically because New Orleans, we've been talking about how great their secondary is. Their run defense is starting to get a little leaky. And so I think this lines up for McCoy in this game.
Yeah, no argument here. He's coming off his least active day two of the season in terms of touches, only 13 in that thrashing out in the Meadowlands last Thursday. So should be fresh, coming off extra rest, and you're absolutely right. You'd have to think that that Bruce Dennison and the rest of those guys are going to be attacking New Orleans on the ground because that's the best way to go at it.
Buffalo's 6-3, aren't they?
5-3.
Okay, just wondering.
All right, let's move on to the final game of the early slate, Cleveland and Detroit. 44 is the over-under, with Detroit favored by 11 on the road. Guys, play all your Lions, and that's about it.
Yep.
Yes.
Move on.
Yep.
I do want to mention really quick because I wrote on the Lions receivers just a little bit in the rankings story too for this week. Marvin Jones, guys, is your hottest fantasy football wide receiver in the entire league over the past month. He's only played in 3 games. He's got a chance to really continue this. Inconsistency has been the biggest knock on him, but it's boding well. He's on pace for a career high in targets and catches, and not to mention touchdowns, his first double-digit touchdown season since 2013 with the Bengals, and a lot of them have been coming from way out. Four of the 5 touchdowns have been explosives, and given the way Detroit struggled in the red zone, you'd think he should get even more involved once they get closer. So I'm pretty high on, and then obviously the Lions schedule, one opponent with a winning record left. I'm pretty high on both Marvin Jones and Golden Tate rest of the season. What do you think, Kyle?
I'm waiting for the Marvin Jones love to just come crashing down here because we've just seen these stretches from him before.
No doubt.
First
4 games last year.
Yep. Yeah. I don't think it's going to stop this week. But I'm not a huge believer in him long term. Do love Golden Tate though. Interested to see what happens when Kenny Golladay gets back on the field.
Huskies.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're starting to look much better here. I was really not impressed with this Detroit offense early in the season, but they've picked it up. They've picked their pace up a little bit too. I think they finally realized what I was screaming all along, which is Amir Abdullah is not a good running back, and Theo Riddick is not an every down back. So let's just go ahead and start moving this ball through the air a bit more. And it's worked out here lately.
I was waiting for that, John. Two from Amir Monday night. I knew it was coming from Kyle. He's ripping on our boy, but I guess we'll just let it go.
He deserves it. All right, guys, we'll move on to the afternoon slate here. Houston at the Rams, 45.5 is the over-under, with the Rams favored by 11 at home. Guys, the Rams and what Sean McVay has done, when they face a terrible defense, they are not afraid to run it up and just throw all day on you, run all day on you with Todd Gurley. I got to think we like pretty much all the Rams in this matchup, whether it's Goff, Gurley, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Sammy Watkins. And those are five guys that I think are all almost must starts in this matchup against the Houston defense that clearly can be had. Arthur, what do you think about that?
Absolutely. My only trepidation is that this does continue to be a very, very balanced Rams passing attack. So Robert Woods, days after Kyle Neighbors said that he had a very limited ceiling, went off.
Yes.
Two touchdowns, including a 3rd-and-33 conversion. No, I'm kidding, of course. It's not like there was anywhere to see this coming from. The only thing Woods had going from him was a slight uptick in overall usage over the other two guys. And there was enough room for both Woods and Sammy Watkins, obviously, who turned just two targets into one long touchdown, I think 67 yards. So, again, a little leery about the way it's getting spread around. But I'll tell you what, if we weren't talking about the drop off from Tom Savage or from Deshaun Watson to Tom Savage, we would be talking more about what's happened to this Texans pass defense since it lost J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. It has been an absolute joke, and I expect that to be the way that McVay and Goff attack Sunday in L.A. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, as I got into my DFS research a little more on Friday, I started looking more and more at Jacoby Brissett, and you know, I've kind of been laughing at the Houston pass defense for most of the season to begin with. I didn't like their secondary, and then when they lost those pass rushers, it's just a shell of its former self. And yeah. It's to the point now where it doesn't matter who they're facing. I don't care if it's Ryan Fitzpatrick here in a couple of weeks. I have no idea if Ryan Fitzpatrick is on the schedule for them, but he immediately is in consideration as a starter. That's just how bad this Houston pass defense is at this point.
Yeah, it happened fast. John, what do you make of the Houston Texans offense after losing Deshaun Watson? I mean, DeAndre Hopkins still had himself a nice day with 16 targets. A lot of targets for Will Fuller, but an inefficient day, unlike the ones we were seeing with Watson. And then Dante Foreman actually out-touches Lamar Miller, I think, for just the first or second time this season.
Yeah, and I've been waiting on the Dante Foreman thing because I think he's a better back, just a more talented back than Lamar Miller. So I'm stashing Foreman where I can and just sort of waiting for that to come to fruition. But I think everyone's ceiling is capped, even though Hopkins – you know, may get 40 targets, right. You know, or something like that. But, you know, Will Fuller, you know, he doesn't need much to get there, but I don't trust Tom Savage to do it. So I think you have to downgrade pretty much everyone on this Houston offense.
Just pour one out for Will Fuller, one of my favorite guys who was really breaking out after coming back from injury and then gets stuck with Tom Savage.
Yeah.
He'll pour several out on his own from in his hands to on the ground, Kyle. Don't worry
Yikes.
About it.
Yikes.
Wow. All right.
All right. Well, with that, we'll go to Dallas, Atlanta. Obviously, the Zeke news coming down today, unless there's some sort of legal miracle that I'm not aware of, he'll be out for this game and the next few because of the suspension. So this game opened at 50.5. It's already being bet down to 49, with Atlanta favored by 3 at home. Arthur, I want to get your take on this Dallas offense. No Zeke. Dez Bryant is hurt. This is pretty much on Dak's shoulders. And is there anyone on the obviously, I think you got to go out and get – it's got to be Alfred Morris, right, that you have to go out and get if you don't have him already?
Yeah. Yes. First and foremost, but I think all three of those guys now, and I'm including Rod Smith. Kyle looked at me like I was insane last week and didn't know who that was, or 2 weeks ago. But you got to go get them all just because of the situation, obviously, that they can potentially find themselves in this offense. But yes, I think it starts with Alfred Morris, and then we'll see how they handle the passing downs. It will be fascinating. Kyle, Terrence Williams had the game of his life when Dez was a little banged up. Dez is still banged up. Another dude, kind of Marvin Jones-esque. Is there any way that you could envision Terrence Williams stacking some productive fantasy days on top of each other?
It depends on if Dez Bryant is on the field. I actually think that if Dez can get out there and be a decoy, then I think that Terrence Williams is a pretty good play. If he's out there and they're going to have to rely on him as a number one, I'm not a huge fan of it. And by the way, I just went ahead and I Googled Alfred Morris because I was curious. He's only 28 years old. I feel like this guy has been in the league since like 2003. am I alone on this? He just feels like he's
been around. It does feel like he's been around for a long time.
And he's only 28. What is happening?
He's got the workload, even after being a backup last year. He's got the workload of about a 38-year-old, so that makes sense.
All right, maybe that's why.
On the Atlanta side, I kind of like Mohamed Sanu as a WR2 flex type guy this week, especially if Julio Jones continues to be questionable throughout the week. What do you guys think of Sanu in this matchup?
Well, it'd be nice if Julio Jones stopped dropping touchdown too, right, John?
Yeah, don't remind me.
Yeah, I mean, this Dallas secondary has been beatable all year. Mohamed Sanu probably is, once again, going to be a nice, solid play. He only had three targets last week, but I'm guessing that's going to jump back up against this Dallas secondary. I'm really confused with going on with this run game. Since over the last month, Devontae Freeman is not getting the touches that he used to. Arthur, have you heard any rumblings of what's going on there?
I have not. No, there's just been something off, obviously. Call it Super Bowl hangover, call it changing both coordinators. There's something amiss with the Falcons. And it's hard to make sense of. I think Coleman, I think, has found the end zone a couple straight weeks now too, and has outproduced Freeman. So yeah, it's hard to it's hard to grasp for sure.
All right, well, let's move on to Giants in San Francisco. 42 is the over under. The Giants favored by 2.5 on the road. I'm just here for you guys, CJ Beathard takes.
Yes. Do it right now. Get them in your lineup. If you need a stream to get a stream of quarterback in there, CJ Beathard is your guy. I mean, this Giants defense has completely phoned it in. Like, this is going downhill quickly. CJ Beathard has the legs to run out of the pocket. He can pick up rushing touchdowns. They are going to the San Francisco Giants, the 0-9 San Francisco Giants, are about to hang some points on the New York Giants this week. And I think I called them the San Francisco Giants.
He's just so excited.
I have not heard, we're at week 10 of this podcast, and I have not heard Kyle more excited about any individual player than CJ Beathard. So I would not have guessed that. That is awesome, though. That is definitely awesome.
I'm guessing I'm not gonna regret this at all.
Well, yeah, unless Jimmy Garoppolo gets the start. we don't think that's going to happen. The 49ers go on bye in week 11. I'm guessing it'll be Garoppolo week 12, 1 week before he heads to for his homecoming at Soldier Field, I believe.
Arthur, do you have any Beathard takes or any takes in general on this game?
I do actually, but. Are we doing bold predictions now? I'm going to wait. It sounds like that was Kyle's, but I'll wait so we don't load them all up on the listeners at once.
All right. I do. I think this game has a sneaky shootout potential because of pace of play. The Niners have the fastest pace of play in the NFL. Giants, I believe, are sixth in pace of play in the NFL. So I think there's a lot of plays to be had, which means there's more opportunity, more volume. So Evan Engram is a guy that continues to absolutely destroy at tight end. The guy that I really like at tight end this week, Carlos Hyde, especially in a PPR league, Carlos Hyde is getting at least 8 or 9 targets a game, and he's game flow independent against a Giants defense that is one of the worst in DVOA against the rush. And on the Giants side, Arthur, I want to get your take on a potential streamable running back here. Orleans Darkwa is a guy who's not getting a ton of snaps, but when he's in, he's getting the ball. I think he could get 16 to 20 touches against a 49ers defense that can't stop the run. Is Darkwa a guy that maybe I should go out and get?
Orleans Darkwa is my RB14 this week. So wow. I would say that, yes, if he's available on waivers, he has a chance to really go off. And we kind of talked about, I'm trying to remember what team it was now, teams that are low to get their young guys in the game. And certainly the Giants fall under that category with Wayne Gallman and Paul Perkins, who's been put on ice completely. But for whatever reason, Ben McAdoo likes Orleans Darkwa, and this is a huge spot for him. And actually, he was the one salvageable asset, I believe, other than Evan Engram last week, too.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next game. It's the Sunday night game, New England and Denver. 46 is the over-under, with New England favored by 7.5 on the road. Chris Hogan looks like he's probably going to be out for this one, at least at this point. This seems like it sets up to be a total Rob Gronkowski-type game, doesn't it, Kyle?
Yes, I mean, he has absolutely smashed them over the last four games I think he played. I think he's averaging over 100 yards against them in his last four games, and he has a touchdown in every one, if I remember correct. I think that's going to continue. The Denver defense continues to be a pass funnel over the middle of the field. I kind of like how this sets up for James White and Rex Burkhead. Arthur, do you think that could be a possible play in the flex spot for him?
Yeah, I do. Burkhead may still be available on waivers. He was on my nine route this week, and he's definitely made his move in that backfield, and I think that does have a strong chance of continuing. The Broncos defense still can't really cover backs in the receiving game very well, and it looks like the Patriots want to feature not only James White but Burkhead in that regard. So, yes, I like both of those plays a lot. Guys, I didn't know how high it would be reasonable to rank Gronk this week. I ended up with him at 8 overall in my top 100 list, and I was tempted to put him even higher. So, yeah, I think he's going to go nuts. It's just a fun spot. Tom Brady, the Broncos have obviously had his number a little bit over the years, and now you got Brady coming off the bye, and you got the Broncos, who might as well have been on bye last week. It's going to be interesting to see if this could be a Brady, you know, a big game for him, or kind of how this one's going to unfold.
Hey, I got a quick question here. After watching Denver's defense get shredded last week by, I want to say Philly, are we getting to the point where we have to worry about them just phoning it in?
It's a fair question. Rookie head coach, we talked about this on the PFW podcast too. Remember that Vance Joseph is a defensive specialist, and it hasn't been a good look of late. So, you know, and I think that the demoralizing state of the quarterback situation in Denver maybe fuels that possibility that you just mentioned. Maybe these guys will phone it in. But again, they got Super Bowl pedigree and still some leaders, even without DeMarcus Ware on that team. So probably not going to happen, but I don't think it can be discounted. What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think we're close. We're getting close to that spot. And if New England pours it on, we could reach that point by this time next week. All right, well, let's move on to the Monday night game. Miami, Carolina, 40 is the over-under. Carolina favored by 10 at home. Kyle, you had mentioned just wanting to skip this one. what do you think of the way Christian McCaffrey's come on in this offense? So I think he's starting to finally kind of get it in this Carolina offense, and I think this is a potential if not a blow up spot, but a really good spot for him.
I don't like their offense. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I mean, you figure that they're gonna continue to lean on him more and more, right? Jonathan Stewart.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he's a fine play. I'm not trying to talk anyone off him, but I just don't see the high ceiling with him that I thought we were going to see by this point of the season. Arthur, do you?
Well, no, we obviously haven't seen it yet, but I think John may be onto something. He not only gets a career high 15 carries last week, 66 yards. Is also his career high, his first rushing touchdown. I know that doesn't sound like much, obviously 66 yards, like that's a big day. It was better than his previous five games combined on the ground. So, and meanwhile, you got Jonathan Stewart, who I think fumbled twice. I know he fumbled once for sure. It fumbled twice, thank you. And it was at 1.9 yards per carry. He's at 2.9 on the season, the same as McCaffrey. So, I think he's going to be a good guy to have down the stretch. Cause again, I think Stewart hasn't even gotten hurt yet. That's the other part of it. He's always due for an injury that we haven't even seen yet. He's just been totally, not capable thus far. So, yes, I think McCaffrey's someone you're going to want to have Sunday. I don't really trust that Miami defense and those linebackers. So he's going to have a chance to be productive in both facets of the game. What about Devin Funchess and Cam Newton, guys?
Cam has been running the ball a lot lately. He's got, I believe, nine rushes in each of the past three games. Because Carolina, I think, has finally realized that this is how you have to win when you've got Cam at QB. He has to run.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that elevates the ceiling to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way he has a ceiling, because we've seen that he has not been effective in the passing game. And I don't see it going back to 2015 Cam at any point for the passing game. So you're going to have to continue to rely on him with his legs, because when they don't, it gets ugly quickly.
No doubt, but that's a great point. Yes, he's averaging 10 carries over the past four games, so that clearly, raises his ceiling quite a bit. Is there anything noteworthy, guys, here on the Miami side? Could this be a Devontae Parker spot? I know James Bradbury has turned into a pretty darn good corner there in Carolina.
I don't like anybody in this game in Miami.
No, I watched way too much of that Miami game on Monday night to realize how bad that offense is right now.
But I'll tell you, there was room for both of those backs in the first game without Ajayi. I mean, if Drake doesn't fumble, you'd have to call that an overall productive game for them, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess. They couldn't get out of their own. They couldn't get out of their own way, which was one of the more irritating things that I've witnessed, was watching them pick up first downs and then end up backing up 10 yards for holding penalties every time I turned around.
Yeah, you're right. It was a tough watch. I think like 23 combined penalties. That was a real stinker.
All right, guys. Well, let's close it out with our bold calls. Arthur, I want to hear your bold call first.
Well, you sort of got me letting the cat out of the bag already, or letting the Orleans Darqua out of the bag. I've got him at RB14, but I'll raise that up a notch and say he's going to be an RB1 this week. And just to sweeten the pot, because I haven't gotten a bold prediction right yet this season, I will also say that Evan Ingram is obvious, but let's throw Sterling Shepard in the mix too. I'm going to say that the Giants have a running back, a wide receiver, and a tight end all finish top 15 in San Francisco Sunday.
All right, Kyle, was C.J. Beathard your bold call this week, or do you have another one?
Well, you know what? We'll pair it. We'll pair it together here. We'll take C.J. Beathard, and we're going to take Marquise Goodwin for a long touchdown to make him a nice fantasy relevant here this week.
Man, you guys are, I wanted to make my bold call out of this game too. I think we're all high on this game from a fantasy perspective. So, I'm just going to stay on brand. And with the other game that I like is a sneaky shootout, DeSean Jackson is a WR1 this week. One of these weeks, it'll be true, guys. All right. Well, that'll do it for the PFW Fantasy Football Podcast. For Arthur Arkish and Kyle Neighbors, I'm John Solly. Good luck in your matchups this weekend.